have continued rains. We have communities that cannot go into houses or living in evacuation centers.
Philippines typhoon help still needed. It's Monday, January 10th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online. Visit us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, finding enough homes for refugees. Stitching together a new future. Virtual study returns. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United Nations and international agencies are warning more than 3 weeks after Typhoon Odette struck the Philippines on December 16th that millions of survivors remain in desperate need of emergency assistance. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The typhoon ripped across an enormous area in southern and central Philippines, about the size of Austria, razing thousands of houses and displacing more than 680,000 people. Torrential rains, floods, and fierce winds destroyed hospitals, damaged infrastructure, and knocked out water filtration systems, posing a health hazard for survivors. The United Nations launched an emergency appeal 2 weeks ago for $107 million. To provide emergency aid for more than 500,000 of the most vulnerable displaced Filipinos. Since then, says World Food Program Philippines Country Director Brenda Barton, the number of people needing humanitarian aid has jumped from 2 million to 7 million. Speaking from the capital Manila, she says many areas remain unreachable. Many, she says, still are without telephone communications and electricity.
One out of, I think, 18 municipalities still do not have water. And, of course, we're seeing incidents of diarrhea coming up. We're seeing children begging on streets. UNFPA, as for the press release we issued, is worried about sex trafficking, gender-based violence, etc. And, of course, we as a community are worried about nutrition emergency setting in.
As part of the UN appeal, the World Food Program is asking for $25 million to cover food, logistics, and telecom needs. Barton says the WFP has received only $4.7 million 3 weeks into this crisis.
And the situation, of course, is being worsened now because we have continued rains. We have communities that cannot go into houses or living in evacuation centers. And COVID, just like in other parts of the world, is now, of course, starting to rip through the Philippines with its highly dense population.
Barton says the Philippine government is doing what it can to provide food, shelter, and other life-saving relief to its stricken population. However, she notes support from the international community is required. She warns that without aid, many people will get ill and many will die. She says malnutrition rates among children will continue to rise. If Typhoon Odette remains a forgotten crisis, she says many children will become stunted because of poor nutrition, impairing their growth and development. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. India monitoring bridge being built by China along border. Australian government says Djokovic did not have guaranteed entry into Australia. Hong Kong travel restrictions could have dire consequences. Strong earthquake shakes remote area in western China. Washington reaffirms support for Lithuania against China. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more by visiting us at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Following the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan, hundreds of thousands of Afghans have sought sanctuary and resettlement in the United States. But now that they're here, some families in Wisconsin's two largest cities are having trouble finding a place to live. Nukbat Malik reports from Wisconsin.
Approximately 10,000 Afghan refugees who arrived in the United States are being temporarily housed at Fort McCoy, a Wisconsin military base. Authorities are trying to find them more permanent homes, and about 900 people will be resettled in Wisconsin in 6 different locations, including Milwaukee and Madison. In September and October, several Milwaukee-based humanitarian organizations and a group of Muslim women paid a special visit to Fort McCoy, which is closed to the media. Sheila Badwan of the Hanan Refugee Relief Group, a community organization that works with resettlement agencies, was among them. She says that in an unusual process, refugees are increasingly being handed over to aid organizations and relocation agencies.
So it's not the normal program that is used for refugee resettlement. And so that's been, you know, a strain, I think, on not just, you know, community organizations that work with, but also really the resettlement agencies, you know, across the board.
These organizations must first locate a good home for the refugees. But these refugees who have a different status from others who have been given asylum do not have as many resources available to them, and that's impeding the resettlement process in Milwaukee and Madison.
The vast majority of them have the title of parolee, which means that after they've been here about a year, they have to actually ask for asylum. And the asylum process is really a horrendous process. It's a very difficult process.
Jewish Social Services, a non-governmental organization based in Madison, is prepared to welcome 75 Afghan refugees, but resettling newly arrived refugees can be challenging.
They don't have any of those things that landlords typically do require and ask about on application. We don't sign leases for people. We help them to sign their own leases. So that requires landlords to be flexible in that way.
At this point, we need housing. And so it could be all parts of Milwaukee, different parts of the region that has available housing so that we can place these individuals.
But finding the right rental properties is difficult. Agencies need a home that not only meets the family's needs, but also does not financially strain them.
Milwaukee is a city that has a shortage of housing, especially affordable housing. A lot of the families coming in are very large families, meaning that they may need something more than a three-bedroom. There's a limited amount of three-bedrooms, limited amount of houses within an affordable price range.
So what we're doing this time around is that we are securing apartments, any apartment that we can, and we're securing it ahead of time to be able to place people in when they do arrive rather quickly. That presents a financial challenge for our agencies.
In Wisconsin, some private rental services like Airbnb are trying to help. They are working to connect resettlement agencies with people who can provide some of these families with inexpensive lodging. Nukhbat Malik, VOA News, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, how some refugees are stitching together a new future for themselves. Happening now in Asia, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi was in Sri Lanka Sunday seeking to advance Beijing's ambitious Belt and Road Initiative as the island nation tries to rescue itself from a foreign currency and debt crisis. It's partly due to infrastructure built with Chinese loans that don't guarantee revenue. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's great to start off a brand new week with you on VOA Asia. Most refugees who come to the United States have little training and lack in the proper skills to find work. A teenager from the Chicago suburbs decided to address this by collaborating with a local center to teach refugee women how to sew and give them the opportunity to earn a living. Kulsoom Khan explains.
So this is another version of the flare sleeve blouse. This one's a little bit wrinkly, but I chose to go with all pastel colors here because I felt it made like a great spring, summer sort of top, and also with the triangle neck.
17-year-old Nuran Khan has always had a passion for sewing and designing clothes.
In sophomore year, I took a fashion merchandising course through my high school, and then I followed that up with a fashion construction course at the School of the Art Institute, and that really got me motivated to delve into fashion more.
She decided to channel that passion into a good cause. In 2019, Khan started All Sorts, a clothing company. The Chicago area nonprofit teaches refugee women how to sew.
At All Sorts, our mission is to help refugee women obtain a sustainable income to support their family. And we do that by training them to be seamstresses.
All Sorts works with ICNA Relief, Refugee Resource Center in Chicago, to hold sewing classes for the women every week. The women learn to make household items like pot holders, tablecloths, aprons, and placemats, as well as clothing. All Sorts then compensates the women for the items they sew and sells them at community markets and on Etsy and the company website. The proceeds from the sales are invested back into the sewing training program. Some of the women take orders and work from home once they finish the program. ICNA Relief also helps the women find full-time jobs at manufacturing facilities or places that need seamstresses.
So I connect them with that organization, send them to interviews, and luckily few of our graduates were able to work there. So it's a win-win situation for everyone, I guess, because it gives me so much pleasure to see our women flourishing.
Many of the program's participants are earning for the first time in their lives. There are six participants in the class right now. Burmese refugee Kin Kin Hate is one of them. She is learning new skills and sewing techniques and says she would definitely recommend the program to other refugees from her country. Kulsum Khan for VOA News, Chicago.
Amid the concerning rise in COVID cases, a number of universities in California have canceled their in-person classes and have gone back online. Kristina Shevchenko spoke with several international students about the difficulties of learning during the continuing pandemic. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Most California University students were happy to get back to in-person learning in the fall. But the COVID Omicron surge has forced many California universities to resume online remote learning. Derek is from China. He lives here at one of the buildings of the University of California, Los Angeles Cooperative Housing. It's Derek's second year at UCLA studying anthropology, but so far he's been in the classroom for only one semester.
I do very much enjoy being on campus with everybody. I enjoy the company. I enjoy the social life, the social aspects. I like the feeling of being in classrooms, of walking from class to class. I feel more motivated to study when I'm on campus. I feel I'm getting a lot of things that I would not be getting if everything is online.
But now Derek, like thousands of his fellow students, will be returning to his room to sit in front of the computer screen.
In fact, if winter and spring are both going to be online, then by the time I graduate, I've only spent one quarter on campus. So I really think that it's quite sad.
21-year-old John lives at the fraternity house. He says when he and his fellow fraternity members learned about going back online, they all felt extremely stressed.
Nobody learns anything. You don't learn anything. Half of the time, you can turn on your Zoom and you'll just walk around and do whatever.
So far, seven California universities, Stanford and the University of Southern California, among them, have announced they are switching to online classes. On top of that, universities will require proof of COVID booster shots from all students returning to the classroom. But booster shot requirements concern some students a lot less than the price of their tuition. As an international student, Derek pays roughly $40,000 a year for his education, but he believes studying online should not cost him that much. For now, the universities are only planning to hold online classes for a couple of weeks. That's welcome news for many here.
Even if you're there and being very attentive, it's still not the same as being in class.
Many students here just want to get back to the classroom. Kristina Shevchenko, Anna Rice in Los Angeles, California, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us today. Continue with us online. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all great places to follow VOA Asia throughout the day and the week. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.